Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The nation's oldest continuously operating medical society is urging the state of Massachusetts to take a bold new step in combating a modern health crisis. The Massachusetts Medical Society, which represents more than 25,000 doctors and medical students across the state, is calling for Massachusetts to create so-called supervised injection sites. These are facilities where drug users can go to inject under a medical professional's supervision. And why? Well, the opioid addiction crisis, which claimed nearly 2,000 lives in the state last year, that according to Dr. Barbara Herbert, president of the Massachusetts chapter of the American Society of Addiction Medicine.
Everything we can do to keep people alive long enough to find that spark that makes it possible for them to be better, for them not to be controlled by drugs, I support.
While physicians like Dr. Herbert see supervised injection sites as a new way to give substance abuse sufferers a chance to get help, other physicians see it as simply giving up on more meaningful ways to curb the opioid epidemic. Joining us now is one of them, Dr. Jeffrey Reynolds. He's president and CEO of the Family and Children's Association, a New York nonprofit that offers addiction treatment, youth education counseling, and homeless services. He previously served as executive director of the Long Island Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. Jeffrey Reynolds, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Now, you wrote a while ago when there was the proposal for a supervised injection facility on Long Island that it feels, quote, an awful lot like we are giving up and just accepting rampant heroin use as a fait accompli. Why is that your take on these injection sites?
You know, for more than a dozen years, we've been pushing the fact that there's a crisis bubbling just below the surface, and in some cases, way above the surface, and that we need to double down on prevention, access to treatment, and support for young people in recovery. And the reality is that whether we're talking about New York State or Massachusetts, that has not happened. That year after year in regions across this country, we've seen dramatic increases in arrests, treatment admissions, and overdose fatalities. And we haven't moved the needle. And we haven't moved the needle because we haven't made treatment more accessible. We haven't made treatment on demand a reality. And so when we think about where do we go from here, particularly, you know, you talked a little bit about physicians kind of signing on to the idea of safer injection sites. The reality is physicians helped create this problem with rampant overprescribing throughout the late 1980s and 1990s. And now the solution, instead of making sure that those folks have treatment, really is to say, well, let's just bring them in and we'll watch them shoot up and we're going to hope for the best. So from an ideological standpoint, before we even get into the practical piece of this, there are some significant problems. And it does feel like we're just saying, look, we did the best we could. We just couldn't get people into treatment. We just couldn't do prevention the right way. And the very best we can do is to help them shoot up.
So let me just jump in here because ideology and practicality meet in a very sort of a significant way when it comes to the number of people who have died due to drug overdoses in this epidemic. And, you know, when we last talked about the possibility of supervised injection sites on this program, we actually spoke with Brandon Marshall. He's an assistant professor of epidemiology at the Brown University School of Public Health. And he did a 2011 study in Vancouver at a supervised injection facility there and found out that after this facility opened, lives indeed were saved. And I just want to play you some tape. Here's what Brandon Marshall said.
What we found was that in the neighborhood where the facility was operating in the downtown east side, overdose mortality decreased by 35% after the facility opened in that neighborhood, compared to only 9% in the rest of the city of Vancouver.
So, Mr. Reynolds, a 35% drop in mortality around one of these supervised injection sites, is that not a compelling enough reason to try something here in Massachusetts? I mean, 2,000 people died last year due to overdoses.
Yeah, look, and you're talking to someone who's been to quite a few funerals so far this year, and this isn't kind of a new rodeo for me. I talk to families each and every day, sometimes 10 times a day, who have lost loved ones.
Yeah.
And so that's not lost on me. You're talking to someone who fervently supports syringe exchange. The question is, will those results be replicated in communities across your state or my state? So in my state, I can tell you that the likelihood of situating a safer injection facility anywhere on Long Island is zero to none. It's not going to happen. And if it were, how do the folks who are injecting 10 to 15 times a day get into that injection site to make sure that all of those injections are safe? And so I think the data from that study is compelling. It is important. And if some communities want to set these up, that's fine, but there are communities where it's not going to happen, and we still need to emphasize treatment. You know, one of the things we know about addiction is that every single time you put that drug into your body, you reinforce a progressive disease that in a lot of cases winds up being fatal. And so there are some stopgap measures we can take along the way, but understand this is not a solution to addiction.
Yeah, yeah.
It might be a way of preventing some fatalities, and I don't diminish that in any way, shape, or form. But I worry that less progressive lawmakers take a look at this and say, let's just give them the needle and be done with it.
Let me just...
Darwinian kind of conversation that's taking place around addiction at this point in time in terms of whose fault it is and who causes people make bad choices. I worry about us looking at this and saying, well, come on, we gave you the safer injection sites. What else do you want?
Right.
So I want people to get well.
So I just want to jump in here again, and forgive me, it sounds like I'm cutting you off. I don't mean to do that. But this line of thinking, these concerns that you're raising right now are exactly some of the reasons why some of those folks voting who voted this weekend with the Massachusetts Medical Society voted in the affirmative to try these pilot programs here in the state of Massachusetts, because they were presented with some evidence, again, I point to Vancouver, where one of these facilities opened, that having the facility there may have actually gone a significant way to increasing the number of people who did receive treatment. So let me just play a little bit more of tape for you. This, again, is Brandon Marshall from Brown University, who studied inside the injection facility in Vancouver. And here's what he found in terms of getting people into treatment.
They provide a pathway for folks into treatment and eventual lifelong recovery. We found that people who used the supervised injection facility were 30% more likely than those that didn't to enter into detox, particularly people who use the facility frequently and also made contact with addictions counselors that work in the facility itself.
So is that compelling to you? Because maybe it's sort of a step towards closing the gap between people who can't find a pathway to treatment.
I think it would be hopeful, and it should only play out that way. I think, look, we all want the same thing in terms of saving lives. You know, I think in some cases, you know, when you look at the data associated with syringe exchange programs, when they're executed in the right way with the right funding, they can provide a bridge to treatment. But there are a lot of questions about who is on site, what's the message that's given out to the user. And quite frankly, there's a secondary question in that right now, the vast majority of folks who are using heroin are not using needles to administer that heroin. They're still snorting it. Mm-hmm. Out here on Long Island, about 10% of users are actually injecting. Do we, in some way, shape, or form, increase the likelihood of injecting behaviors as a result of setting up these facilities? I don't know. I'm not ready to say absolutely we do, but I think there are other ways to get people into treatment. And quite frankly, you know, in your state and in my state, I've heard stories where it takes people 3 to 4 weeks to ever get into treatment. And so getting folks into treatment is not necessarily a hard thing to do. You simply need to ask them and then make it available. And
yeah.
So I do find, you know, the notion that these sites can be a bridge to more understanding, a bridge to creating a relationship with the user and ultimately getting them into treatment, I'm not sure it's going to play out that way. And the reality might be here. It depends on how this is executed.
You know,
is it properly funded? Where is it situated? What staff are on site?
Right. I should say that at least one physician this weekend, while the Mass Medical Society was taking its vote, said that he was disturbed that there wasn't as equally vigorous discussion about supporting efforts or pushing the state of Massachusetts to invest more heavily in needle exchange programs or the mass distribution of Narcan. I mean, are those alternative ways to combat the opioid crisis that you would embrace?
I think they are. You know, syringe exchange programs, the data on them and the evidence is so clear and concise, and there's 25, 30 years worth of data to say absolutely they work. There are evidence-based models, and we know what the staffing should look like. We know what the messages should be. We know where they should be situated to get the most traffic. When it comes to naloxone, you know, in communities across the entire country, there are countless lives being saved with naloxone. There, too, though, in our state, we've seen kind of a lot of hype around naloxone. And in some cases, those folks are never linked to treatment. And I know of half a dozen cases since the beginning of the year where the person was revived with Narcan, prematurely discharged from a hospital, was dead of an overdose 2 hours later. And so along those lines, I think we want to make sure that we're using every available tool, that we're treating this like a crisis, and that we're actually offering people a long-lasting solution. I want to help somebody live till tomorrow as well, but honestly, I want to make sure they live beyond that. I want to make sure that they're getting access to the treatment they need to get well, not just to hold them over till tomorrow morning.
Jeffrey Reynolds, last question for you, because you said something a little earlier that I want to just hear more about. We've just got a couple seconds here. You likened the opening of a supervised injection facility as perhaps leading down the road to some kind of dark social Darwinism, where we're just putting folks, you know, suffering from substance abuse addiction off in a corner, saying you got medical professionals to look after you, and not doing anything else with the problem. I mean, that is that's a very harsh take on what seems to be a well-intentioned experiment here in Massachusetts. I mean, what is it? What is your genuine greatest concern with injection facilities like this?
Well, look, the climate in which we now live, especially in the past 5 months, has changed dramatically, and that when we talk about addiction and we talk about our response to substance use, we keep saying we can't arrest our way out of this problem, yet that's what we continue to do. We've seen the stigma and the blame not fall down in the middle of a crisis, but we've seen more finger pointing than ever before. And we exist in a climate where there's a fiscal conservatism here, there's a social conservatism here, and I can imagine a place where lawmakers say, look, let's just do this. It's a lot cheaper than treatment, and the folks that are pushing for some reform in the middle of a crisis, let's just give them this and be done with it. And so, you know, look, read the comments section of any news article about addiction, and you can kind of see where a large segment of our country and how they view addiction.
Yeah.
That extends to elected officials as well. And the current climate in Washington is not necessarily hospitable to some of the things that, you know, myself and the folks within my organization care about.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's paranoid. I think it's something that we have to be on guard for.
Well, by the way, listeners, you can go back to our website, radioboston.org, to listen to the conversation that I've been referring to with Brandon Marshall, the Brown University researcher who came away with a lot of positive findings for a supervised injection facility in Vancouver, B.C. Jeffrey Reynolds, president and CEO of the Family and Children's Association, a New York nonprofit that offers addiction treatment, youth education, and counseling in homeless services. Thank you so much for your perspective today. It's much appreciated.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.